Okay, everyone. I guess we can officially say good afternoon because we passed the moment of noon. And Gemar Chasima Tova, a good Kabang Shtir. I hope everyone had a meaningful Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah this year was different than most years, but I think the experience of having a Rosh Hashanah when we don't have as much singing in shul, when it's less full, to some extent, I think that focuses us on what Rosh Hashanah is really about, on the central lessons of Rosh Hashanah, which doesn't require a lot of people. You know, the idea that a Rosh Hashanah is Kol Ba'ei Olam Yavron Lefon of Kivnei Marion, that we each go and we each count it individually. Sometimes we spend too much time focusing on others and not enough time focusing on ourselves, focusing on just our own relationship with Hashem. And this year on Rosh Hashanah, when I was sitting there and there was a good space of, I don't know, 20, 30 feet between me and the next people. So I had a feeling I felt more like on my own, which I think is a positive Rosh Hashanah type of experience as much as we got to it through the back door. This is a busy time of year. Rosh Hashanah is past. We have Yom HaKippurim coming up, Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Right after that, we get to Sukkos. And one of the things that often gets overlooked during this time of year is today, is Tzom Gedalia. For some reason, I don't know if you've noticed, but Tzom Gedalia always feels like it's on the Sunday. Right? Today is actually Monday, but somehow coming after Yontif, it has like that Sunday feel to it. And I'd like to spend a few minutes with you talking about Tzom Gedalia and hopefully using some of what we say to put it into perspective of Aseres Yemei Tshuva in general. The story of Gedalia is referred to at the end of Malachim Beis. In Perek Chathei of Malachim Beis, the Navi tells us that Nebuchadnezzar destroys Yerushalayim. He burns down the Bayis HaGadol. He burns down that great home, which refers to either the palaces of Shlomo HaMelech, the Beis HaMikdash, etc., both of them. It's burned down. The Jewish people are exiled. They're sent to Bavel. And Gedalia ben Achikam is designated as a governor for the Jews who remained in the land of Israel. The Jews who remained in the land of Israel are the Dalat Ha'am, the poorest people, and the Nebuchadnezzar and Bavel appoints Gedalia to kind of oversee this group of people. And all we see in Sefer Malachim is that Gedalia is appointed and Gedalia dies. It's a very short story. However, in Sefer Yirmiyahu, in chapters 40 through 42, we have a lengthier discussion of the episode of Gedalia. So I'd like to go through some of the points that emerge from Yirmiyahu, and hopefully this will give us a better idea of what we are observing today. So the Perek Mem in Yirmiyahu tells us that Yirmiyahu had been in prison, and then Nebuzaradan, Rav HaTabachim, he's the chief executioner, Nebuzaradan comes to Yirmiyahu, and he tells Yirmiyahu, you know what, I'm taking you out of jail, and you have a choice where to go. You have a choice. You could go to Bavel to be with, you could stay in Bavel with the majority of the Jewish people, or you could go back to the land of Israel and to be with Gedalia. That's what he says. Perek Mem Pasuk Dalid. Im Tov Be'inecha Lavo Iti Bavel Bova Asimas Eini Olecha. You want to come to Bavel? Nebuzradon says, I'll protect you in Bavel. Vim Be'inecha Lavo Iti Bavel Chadol. If you don't want to come to Bavel, just stop. Re'ei Kol Ha'aretz Lefanecha La'tova Yosha Be'inecha Lechas Shom Aleich. Right? You could go anywhere you want. You want to go to Bavel? Great. If not, you go anywhere you want. Vodenu lo yashuv v'shuva el Gedalia ben Achikam ben Shafan shehifkin melech Bavel ba'are Yehuda v'shev ito v'socha o el kol ha'yashuv b'nechalaych. Basically, he says you have a choice. You could go anywhere you want. And he mentions you could even go to be with Gedalia. That's the story. And Yirmiyahu, it sounds like he just decides, I'm going to Gedalia. He doesn't even explain anything to Nebuzradan. And Vayiteno Reva Tabachem Arucham Aseis Vayishalchehu. He gives him some food. He sends him out. And Yirmiyahu goes to Gedalia. And Gedalia is in this area called Mitzpah. And Yirmiyahu is together with Vayesha Bito Betocha Am HaNisharim Ba'aretz. Yirmiyahu is staying with all of the people who remain in the land, which means Yirmiyahu, who is a very prominent individual, he's a Kohen Asher Ba'anatot. He is really a prominent individual. He's a Navi, but he is with the lowest of the Jewish people, the 6,000 Jews who remain with Gedalia. Now, why did Yirmiyahu decide to go and be with Gedalia? What exactly is Yirmiyahu thinking? So there's a few possible explanations. One is that Yirmiyahu really loved Eretz Yisrael. That's like the easiest thing to say. And in fact, later on in Perek Membe's Pasuk Yud, so Yirmiyahu tells the Jewish people, if you stay in Eretz Yisrael and you build vineyards, they won't be destroyed. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, stay, stay, stay. So Yirmiyahu clearly wants people to stay in Eretz Yisrael, and he shows by demonstration that he goes back to Eretz Yisrael. But there's more to it, which is that Yirmiyahu had a personal relationship with Gedalia. Gedalia, who is the son of Gedalia ben Achikam, that his father is named Achikam. The Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Perek Chaf Dalet, Perek Chaf Vav, Pasuk Chaf Dalet, tells us that Yirmiyahu was basically, he had a hard life, right? The prophet Jeremiah didn't have things easily. And on one occasion, he was saved by Achikam ben Shafan. Right, that's Perek Chaf Vav Pasuk Chaf Dalet. So Yirmiyahu feels an allegiance to Gedalia, the son of Achikam, and therefore he goes to Eretz Yisrael, even though it's much less prominent. He has much less of a role than he would have had in Bavel. Now the pasuk in Yirmiyahu Perek Mem continues that there are some soldiers who come by Yishmu Sareha Chayalim Asheba Sadeh, Kihifkin Mech Bavels Gedalia ben Achikam Ba'aretz, and people are with him. The officers here, and a group of officers come to Gedalia in Mitzvah. So now already things begin to pick up. It's not just the Dal HaSa'am, it's not just the lowest people in society who are there, a few officers. Included in these officers are two names that we'll be talking about at some length today, Yishmael ben Netanya and Yonasan ben Kareach. These are included in the officers who go and they spend time with Gedalia. So Gedalia is now attracting some sort of following. And not only is Gedalia attracting some sort of following, Gedalia tells them, you know, you could stay here. You don't have to worry. The king of Bavel appointed me and things will be okay. You don't have to worry about the other nations, about Kastim. Everything will be fine. And he sends the people again to plant vineyards, etc. And things seem to be okay. Things seem to be okay. This is, by the way, what, 2 months after Korban HaBayis, no? The Beis HaMikdash is destroyed on Tisha B'Av, right? So you have Av to Elul. Now it's Tishrei. So this is 2 months after Korban HaBayis. And the governor is already, he already has like some officers with him. Sarei HaChayolim. These are soldiers who are with him. And he tells the people, start planting. So things are really looking up. And things are looking up in a more positive way, because the Psukim in Yirmiyahu then continue that Kol HaYehudim Asher B'Moav U'Bnei Amon U'Be'Edom U'Bechol HaRatzos Shamu Kinosan Melech. By the way, I have no idea if I should read Tanakh in Ashkenazis or Sfaradit. I grew up speaking in Sfaradit, then at some point around the time when I was 15, 16, I changed from Sfaradit to Ashkenazis. I used to be the Bal Kore in Shul. Those couple of months when I was in the process of my transition, I was the worst laner in the history of humanity. Now I'm a switch hitter, so I can go back and forth. For some reason, when I read Tanakh, I don't know why, I read Tanakh in Sfaradit more naturally, and I read Gemara more naturally in Ashkenazis. Go figure. I don't know why that is. But the Jews from all of these countries, right? The Jews in all the countries, they hear that Gedalia is there, and they hear that Gedalia is getting a following, and therefore the Jews begin to return. Not the Jews in Bavel. The Jews in Bavel are kind of stuck because Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He takes those Jews captive, but there are Jews in the other countries, and there's beginning to develop some sort of following. So 2 months is a very short time after Korban HaBayis. 2 months later, there's already a crowd. It's more than these 6,000 Dalat Ha'am. I don't know exactly. I don't think anyone knows exactly how many people are there. But the Pasuk says that they are gathering a lot of wine and they are gathering a lot of, they're harvesting and things are going pretty well. Well, what happens is that some of these officers report to Yirmiyahu that this fellow, Yishmael ben Netanya, is up to no good. One of the officers who's with Yirmiyahu is Yishmael ben Netanya. And the other officers, Yochanan ben Kareach and the Sarei HaChayelim Asher Basadeh, they come to Gedalia and they say, Hayadoa teida ki ba'alis melech b'nei Amon shalach et Yishmael ben Netanya lahakot ha'nefesh. They say that this Yishmael ben Netanya, he was appointed, or the king of Amon sent Yishmael ben Netanya to kill you. Now, what's going on over here is obviously a lot of international politics. Gedalia is appointed by the king of Bavel, and the king of Amon wants to take control of the land. So he has one of Gedalia's officers, Yishmael ben Netanya, who he sets up to try and kill Gedalia. Yishmael ben Netanya, the Psukim tell us in Melachim, not only is he set up by the king of Ammon, but Yishmael ben Netanya is also Mizera HaMalucha. Zera HaMalucha means that Yishmael ben Netanya had some royal blood flowing through his veins, and therefore he felt that he deserves to be the governor rather than Gedalia. He wants the job. It's almost similar to Korach, no? That Korach's rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu is because he felt, hey, how come all the jobs are going to Moshe's family? I also deserve something. And Yishmael ben Netanya feels the same way. Now, there are certain midrashim about Yishmael ben Netanya that he is Mizera HaMalucha on one side, but his lineage from his mother's side is very questionable. His lineage from his mother's side, the Psukim in Divrei Hayomim say he had like a great-great-grandmother. There are different versions about how many generations before him it was, 24 generations, 16 generations, whatever it is. But his great-great-grandmother was some person named Atara. And Atara was a queen of a different nation who marries a great-great-great-grandfather of Yishmael ben Netanya. And there is no indication that there was a conversion in that process, which means that Yishmael ben Netanya has Zera HaMalucha, he has royal blood from his father's side that flows through him, but there's also some question about his Jewishness. We have a similar episode later on in Jewish history with Herod, no? King Herod also felt that he had royal blood, but there's also some question about whether he was even Jewish. This is always, again, I'm not a big fan of trying to analyze Tanakh figures psychologically, but the Midrashim seem to say something along these lines, which is that Yishmael ben Netanya is a complicated figure because he wanted to rule to some extent to show that he is really part of the team. Because there's some question about his lineage, that pushes him to really want to rule. Now the Psukim say that the officers go over to Gedalia and they say, be careful about this Yishmael ben Netanya. After that, Yochanan ben Kareach himself goes over to Gedalia, Baseter. He calls Gedalia to the side, like in private. And he tells him, listen, Elchana v'aket Yishmael ben Netanya v'ish lo yeda. Let me go and kill Yishmael ben Netanya. No one's going to know. Lama yakeka nefesh v'nafotsu ko Yehuda ha'nikbatzim elecha v'avda she'erit Yehuda. Why should Yishmael ben Netanya kill you? And it will destroy whatever remains of the community, the Avda She'erit Yehuda, and what remains will be lost. Let me, Yochanan ben Kareach goes, let me kill Yishmael ben Netanya. But the Pasuk says, Vayomi Gedalia ben Achikam, Yochanan ben Kareach, Al ta'aseh hadavar hazeh. Don't do it. Ki sheker ata dover Yishmael. Because what you're saying is a lie. Gedalia doesn't believe that Yishmael ben Netanya is going to kill him. Ki sheker at hadover. Next pasuk. Perek mem aleph. Vayhi b'chodesh ha-shvi'i, v'yishmael ben Netanya el Elishama mizer hamlucha v'rabei hamalf asaran Hashem mito Gedalia ben Achikam v'yochlu sham lechem yachda v'mitzpah. The next pasuk says that in the seventh month, b'chodesh hashvi'i, it's a day in Tishrei, so Yishmael ben Netanya has a meal with Gedalia ben Achikam, and during that meal, v'yachem Yishmael ben Netanya v'aseret anashim asher hayu ito, v'yakur et Gedalia ben Achikam ben Ashafan b'cherev v'yamat. During this meal, Gedalia is killed. That's the basic story in the Navi. And all the Jews begin to disperse. The Jews run over to Yirmiyahu and they ask him what to do. Yirmiyahu says, stay in Eretz Yisrael, things will be okay, you'll be protected. Definitely don't go to Mitzrayim. But the Jews pick up, they go to Mitzrayim, and that ends the history of a Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. And in the expression that the Rambam has, what happened with the death of Gedalia is Nichba Gachelat Yisrael Hanishara, the last embers of the Jewish people, is extinguished. That's the story. Now, the turning point, when I used to watch baseball games at the end of the game, they would like have a thing, the turning point of the game. Do they still have this? There still is baseball, even though there are no fans. But they used to have this thing called the turning point of the game. So the turning point in the entire story over here is when Gedalia says, I'm not going to listen to you, Yochanan ben Kareach, ki sheker ata dover. You're speaking lies. You're saying lies. And the Gemara in Nida Daf Samach Aleph, the Gemara says that what Gedalia was doing is he says, I can't accept what you're saying about Yishmael ben Netanya because it's an Isser of Lashon Hara. The halacha is that Lashon Hara, you're not only forbidden to speak Lashon Hara, you're forbidden to accept Lashon Hara. Lo tisa shem hashav is an Isser d'oraisa to accept Lashon Hara. The Chofetz Chaim, by the way, begins the Sefer with like, he counts Isurim. What emerges is that if you speak Lashon Hara, it's ke'ilu, I don't know what, right? The Chofetz Chaim just like gathers Isser after Isser after Isser. But Kabbalah Lashon Hara is also Aser, to accept Lashon Hara as true is Aser. And Gedalia says, I'm not going to accept the Lashon Hara. Comes along the Mesilas Yesharim in Perek Chav. Mesilas Yesharim, you know, is based on the Brice of Reb Pinchas ben Yair in Meseches Avodah Zarah, which gives us a progression of midos that we're supposed to move through. Torah mevi alidei zehiros. Zehiros brings to zerizos. Zerizos brings to nekiyos, etc. And one of the highest levels in Mesilas Yesharim is chasidus, no? There's precious, then chasidus, then kedusha. Basically, you add chasidus, you're near the top of the ladder. And the Mesilas Yesharim describes the din of chasidus, or the maila of chasidus. The Mesilas Yesharim describes it as what we call in Jewish chumras. The Mesilas Yesharim says that a person who is a chassid, right, chassid not in the white socks, dark coat sort of way, but chassid in the way of being genuinely pious. So someone who is a chassid, the Mesilas Yesharim says, wants to do the will of the person he loves, even without being told, and will go over, right? He will go beyond the call of duty, and therefore the chassid will adopt chumras. Now, Mesilas Yesharim is saying that there's a concept of chumras, but the concept of the chumras, you get the impression, applies to the chassid, which means that, now again, how I define a chumrah is not abundantly clear. No one knows exactly how we define a chumrah. But a chumrah for the Mesilas Yesharim should only be done by someone who's already passed through Zehirus and Zerizos, etc. You've gone up in the ladder, then it's time for chumras. But the Mesilas Yesharim writes in Perek Chav that chumras are not a simple thing. You have to weigh the chumrah properly. And he gives two examples. He says, sometimes we have cases in Shas, in Tanakh, of people who did chumras, but terrible things emerged. And the first example he gives is Gedalia. Gedalia had a chumrah. Gedalia says, I'm not going to accept the Lashon Hara that they're telling me about Yishmael ben Netanya. They're telling me Yishmael ben Netanya is out to kill me. I am going to refuse to accept it. And look what happened. Gedalia is killed. The last embers of Jewish sovereignty are extinguished. That is what occurred. The Gemara Nida says that when someone says something negative about a person, you should not accept it, but lamechash miyam aboya, you should at least be concerned with it. You should at least protect yourself. Gedalia, however, does not do that. Gedalia sits down, he has a meal with Yishmael ben Netanya, and during that meal, Yishmael ben Netanya kills him. Says the Mesilas Yesharim, that was an inappropriate chumrah. Because if you want to have a chumrah about not accepting Lashon Hara, you have to take into account what can emerge. Gedaliah should have taken into account, if I don't trust what they're telling me about Yishmael ben Netanya, let's say it's true, that could lead to the destruction of the remains of the Jewish community. So therefore, Gedaliah inappropriately was machmir. That's the Maseilas Yesharim in Perek Chaf. And the Maseilas Yesharim continues. He says the same idea is found at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, no? The Gemara in Gittin, in the Sugya of Kamtza Bar Kamtza, the Gemara tells us about how Caesar wanted to send a carbon to the Jewish people. And there's a certain person over there who's like a troublemaker, and he says, listen, Caesar, you know, you're going to send a carbon, they won't accept it because the Jewish people hate you. And Caesar says, you know what? I don't believe the Jewish people hate me. I'm going to send the carbon anyway. And this messenger goes and he takes the carbon that Caesar is sending and he puts a little mum on the carbon. He makes a nick on the top of the eye or a nick in the lip, something that invalidated the carbon for being brought on the Mizbeach. And the animal comes to Yerushalayim with the messenger and they say, here's the animal, right? The shepsel is duh, right? The sheep is here. And Caesar wants to bring a carbon. And the people say, we got to do it, right? The king says, bring a carbon, you have to listen. But there's a fellow named Zechariah ben Avkulos. And Zechariah ben Avkulos says, no. You can't do that. You can't bring the carbon. You can't be makriv a baal mum on the Mizbeach. So then the people say, well, let's kill the messenger. Let's kill the guy who brings the carbon so he won't go back and tell Caesar that we didn't bring it. The Gemara says that Zechariah ben Avkulos said, no, you can't kill the messenger. People might say that if you're matul mum b'kodshim yeharig, that anyone who makes a blemish on a carbon deserves to die. Zok the Gemara, anav senuso shereb Zechariah ben Avkulos hechrivas hechalenu. Reb Zechariah ben Avkulos is overwhelming humility is what led to the destruction, is what destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Maseilas Yesharim there in Perek Chaf writes, Reb Zechariah ben Avkulos also had additional chumras. He had an additional chumra that he didn't want the people to say that if you're matum b'kachim, if you inflict a wound, if you make a blemish on a carbon, you deserve to die. And this is why the Beis HaMikdash ended up being destroyed. Maseilas Yesharim comments, both episodes show that inappropriate chumras could have disastrous consequences. It's like a funny thing, no? It's a funny thing. People think that chumras are a wonderful thing. First of all, you have to be careful when you adopt chumras. Like the Maseilas Yesharim says, a chumra comes very late in the process. You go through zerizos and zehiros and Nikios, then finally you come to Chumrah. Rav Amital used to say that when he was a student in Merkaz Harav, and the boys would read a statement in the Mishnah Berurah and some other Sefer, where he said, a Baal Nefesh Yachmir La'atzma, that's proper to have a Chumrah, so they would say, oh, the Chumrah is proper for Rav Kook, it's proper for the Nazir, these people should have a Chumrah, right? But we shouldn't. And Rav Amital would complain that today, every boy in yeshiva, when he reads that there's a chumrah, decides to accept it. So you have to be careful about chumras. It might not be for everybody. But I think there's a deeper lesson over here, which is a lesson that is precisely appropriate for this time for Aseres Yemei Tshuva. Tzom Gedaliah always falls out during Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And Aseres Yemei Tshuva is a time where it says in Shulchan Aruch that we should adopt chumras, no? Shulchan Aruch writes that even a person who is not careful all year long about eating paspalter. There's a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch in Yerideya, this is what we learned this past summer, about bread of non-Jews. Sfaradim will not eat bread baked by a non-Jew, even if you know there's no lard shortening in the bread. You know all the ingredients are kosher, but they won't eat it if you can get bread baked by a Jew. Ashkenazim will eat bread baked by a non-Jew, even if Jewish baked bread is available. So far, so good. But during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, Shulchan Aruch says that you should refrain from Passepalter. And it's standard fare that during Aseres you make tshuva for all the right reasons. People want to be machmir. But we want to tell the Rabbonu Shalom, we want to say, Hashem, listen, God, I'm going beyond the call of duty. I'm doing chumras. I'm accepting additional things on myself that I don't have to do. God, Hashem, you should go beyond what you normally do and forgive me, even though I don't deserve it. Right? That's what the Chaya Adam writes, is the reason behind the chumras during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. But it seems to me that the episode with Gedalia sheds a certain light on chumras. And even at this time of year when we are adopting chumras, but we should be careful and not adopt a chumra that could have untoward consequences. Every chumra that you adopt, you have to think carefully, does this hurt somebody? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was very machmir and mitzvahs in general. He was an Orthodox Jew. But when he went to someone's house, you know, the halacha of Netilas Yadayim is that we're supposed to wash till the wrist. You wash Ramot, you wash till the wrist. But Me'ikar Hadin, you only have to wash till the knuckles. That's why in Yom Kippur, when we're not allowed to wash, right? When we wash Netilas Yadayim in the morning, wash Negovas, you wash till the knuckles. You don't wash all the way to the wrist because the strict halacha is all you have to do is wash till the knuckles. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, when he would go to someone's house, he would only wash until his knuckles. And the reason was, you have to remember, before people had indoor plumbing, the way you would get water is someone had to go, you had a Wasser trugger. You had a water carrier who would have to go down and gather water and bring the water up, and then you would use that water. Rabbi Salanter said, why should my chumra of Netilas Yadayim make someone have to carry additional water? So you want to have chumras, it's really appropriate. And this is the time of year where we should have chumras. But I would say, I would suggest that the lesson of Gedalia is the lesson that we should think very carefully whether our chumras have negative impact on other people. They say that the Chafetz Chaim, when he would have guests, the guests at the time of the Chafetz Chaim, today when we invite guests, we invite our next door neighbor over, we invite people who we're friendly with. But in Europe, often the people who would be the guests would be the Dalat Ha'am. They'd be this poor guy shows up in Shul and you invite him over. Chafetz Chaim would feel this person is really hungry. The first thing he would do, make Kiddush right away. Give the guy something to eat right away. Don't say Shalom Aleichem. You have to think about the consequences of your actions and how that will impact on other people. And it seems to me that part of the lesson of Aseres Yimei Tshuva is not just that we should, I don't know how many of you guys know this, there's a YouTube video, I'm Sofrim, you know this? I'm Sofrim, right, doctor, what's he called? If you don't know this, you should really see it. It's hysterical. But being Sofrim only makes sense if it's machmir yachmir la'atzmo. If you have a chumra and it's only for you. But if your chumra impacts on anybody else, so that's not appropriate. Some people try to be machmir not to use an eruv. And there's very good reason in halacha not to use an eruv, by the way. Every single eruv in Judaism involves significant leniencies. But what happens if you don't use an eruv? So if you don't use an Erev, and what that means is that when you're going out, so your wife has to push the carriage and schlep all the stuff, right? Because I don't use the Erev, my wife uses the Erev. That's not appropriate, right? And certainly, if you have a chumrah that impacts on other people, you want to hear Tekiyas Shofar on Rosh Hashanah with all of the chumrahs. So what are you going to do? You're going to ask the Baal Tokeya after davening, blow additional sets. Well, the Baal Tokeya might be hungry after davening, right? Again, I'm speaking to myself. But the point is, every chumrah that we adopt, the lesson of Gedaliah is that we should think about it very carefully. So that's one point I wanted to make from the lesson of Gedaliah. But there's another thing I wanted to say. You know, the story of Gedaliah is understood by that Gemara in Nida, is that when someone says Lashon Hara, you shouldn't accept it, but L'mechash mi'imabaya, you should be careful about it. Now, what does that mean? Right? It means that Gedaliah shouldn't accept the Lashon Hara about Yishmael ben Netanya, but he should have been careful and protected himself, right? And I guess what, wear a bulletproof vest or something when you sit down to eat a meal with Yishmael ben Netanya, or not have a meal with him, something, right, to be careful, maybe it will hurt you. That's what the Gemara says. What does this mean? You don't accept it, but you're nervous about it. The Chafetz Chaim was very frum. That's the introduction. So the Chafetz Chaim, when he wrote the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which is an interesting Sefer because he created a genre of halachos of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara was not a halachic topic at all. It's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, no? This one, Magen Avram, who talks about Lashon Hara. The Rambam has Hilchos Lashon Hara and Hilchos Deos, which is what we would call Musar. Lashon Hara wasn't really a halachic topic. The Chafetz Chaim goes and he accumulates all the dinim. This is a point that Benny Brown makes in one of his articles. The Chafetz Chaim accumulates all the dinim of Lashon Hara and he makes a sefer. Now Lashon Hara is a topic that you could study. Gevaldik. So the Chafetz Chaim works very hard. How do you understand this idea of L'mechash mi'imabaya? The Chafetz Chaim writes, what this means is you have to protect yourself, but do not believe that it is true at all. And therefore, all the halachos that apply to Jews in good standing still apply to this fellow. And therefore, you return the lost items of this fellow. You treat this fellow. You give him aliyahs and shul. They're saying really bad things about him. And you have to protect yourself. They say this guy is an axe murderer. So be careful. Make sure you're not near him when he's holding an axe. But you still give him shlishi and shishi. That's what the Chafetz Chaim writes. Moreover, the Chafetz Chaim says, let's say someone comes to you and tells you that your housekeeper is stealing stuff from you. That means you have to hide your silver when the housekeeper is around. But says the Chafetz Chaim, you still have to pay the housekeeper. There is no leniency given not to pay. This is a person, they're coming and they're telling you that this person is stealing. Chafetz Chaim says, yeah, but there's a mitzvah in the Torah, b'yom el titein scharo, you have to pay your workers the same day. You have to pay this worker, even though, l'mechash mi'yom abaya, even though you're going to be very careful, and it could be that you're going to be very careful, but the Chafetz Chaim holds that every person has a cheskas kashrus. So they tell you this guy's an axe murderer, the person is stealing from you, whatever it is, but the person has a cheskas kashrus, the person is presumed innocent, and therefore you better pay the wages, and therefore you give the person shlishi and shavi'i, etc. Many poskim in the notes, Reb Fava Cohen's son, Reb Binyamin Cohen, has a sefer on the Chafetz Chaim called the Chelkas Binyamin on the Chafetz Chaim. And he points out over there that many poskim completely disagree with this. The Chafetz Chaim holds that if someone tells you something negative about a person, that person's status has to remain the same. Once you know something negative about the person, you don't enter something else. Meaning, they tell me that somebody is a crook. I have no obligation, nor should I enter in a business relationship with this person. However, if they tell me that the guy is a crook, I am not allowed to break my business partnership with him or her. Moreover, says the Chafetz Chaim, the Cheskas Kashrus applies in all situations. Right? They tell you that the guy is doing something wrong, Cheskas Kashrus. That could be really frightening in our world, no? Very often there are allegations of terrible things that people are doing. We've had this, right? Allegations that teachers are abusing students. But the allegation doesn't come with halachic testimony. There's no eidos. According to the Chafetz Chaim, l'mei chashmiyim abaya means they allege that someone is doing a terrible thing, so you have to protect yourself in the future. But anything that happened in the past, if the guy has a position, the person remains in his position. In the Sefer Chalkas bin Yamin, he points out that very many poskim completely disagree with this idea. There was a tshuva in the Netziv in Chelek Beis Simen Aleph. Someone comes to the Netziv and tells him that the shochet in town, the shochet gets tired. You know, the shochet has to check the knife, right? And you do 12 bedikas on the knife. You check it, abisar batufra, right? It really, I'm very scared about this. They taught me how to do it, but I'm scared to death. I'm checking a knife with your fingernail and with like the skin, right? To make sure there's no nick, there's no blemish on the knife. If there's a nick on the knife, it could invalidate the shchita. Shchita has to be a perfect smooth cut. If it has a nick, so it's going to rip the trachea, the esophagus, rather than slice it, and that would invalidate the shchita. So someone comes to the rabbi in town, and he says that the shochet, towards the end of the day, gets tired, and he doesn't check carefully. And they say that the shochet sometimes, they've come to him and they've said this, and the shochet each time came up with a different excuse. So the question is, can they remove the shochet? Only one person is saying it. It's Lashon Hara. Right? You're saying a bad thing about the shochet. So the halacha should be L'mei chashmiyam abaya, which means that if you know about it, be careful. Don't buy the meat yourself. But according to the Chafetz Chaim, you can't remove the shochet from his position because he has a cheskas kashrus. So I know about it. I shouldn't eat his meat, but he should remain the shochet in town. The Netziv says, if the allegation is credible, you gotta not only remove the person, but you can publicize why you're removing the person. You know, there, the lesson of Gedalia, the lesson of L'mei Chashmiyam Abaya, the Chafetz Chaim says, yeah, you protect yourself, but you don't accept it as being true at all. Many of the later Sfarim, they quote that the Chazon Ish felt that this idea is impossible. If I am protecting myself, that means I'm believing that it's somewhat true. Once I believe that it's somewhat true, there have to be consequences. Now, exactly what this means in our scenarios, obviously, you know, we don't want a situation that every allegation is automatically accepted as true. So obviously there has to be some sort of investigative process. But if you recognize that l'mei chashmiyam abaya, if you recognize that you have to be concerned with it, that it's not just total smoke and mirrors, so then most poskim, I think, disagree with the Chafetz Chaim. And they would say, again, we don't know what should have happened with Yishmael ben Netanya. What should have happened? Right, so Gedalia is not supposed to eat the meal with him. Okay, great. Are they supposed to, right? Is Yochanan ben Kareach correct that they're supposed to kill him? Are they supposed to just remove him? Right, we don't know exactly what was proper. We know what was improper. Right, the Chafetz Chaim apparently would say that Yishmael ben Netanya should have just been pushed to the side, I guess. And Yochanan ben Kareach should not have killed him. Right? It's very hard to understand this episode in Sefer Yirmiyahu based on the way the Chafetz Chaim paskins the halacha.
Really?
Yes.
Wouldn't that mean that Yochanan ben Kareach also shouldn't have said anything to Gedalia?
So again, I think Yochanan, it's clear that Yochanan ben Kareach has a right to say something to Gedaliah because there's reason to suspect that Yeshua ben Netanya is out to kill him. So you have to give a warning. But then what happens? What happens after the warning is given? What should you do? Right? So Gedaliah made a mistake. He wasn't careful. But what was the appropriate course of action that should have happened? I think during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, the lessons of Tzom Gedaliah are A, what chumras are appropriate, what chumras are not appropriate. That's clear. But I think there is another lesson in terms of appropriate Bein Adam Lachaveros. Obviously, that chumras should not impact on a Bein Adam Lachavero. And this last point, I think, is really the most significant, not only during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, but all year long. I am under the impression that if there is a credible allegation, so the Chafetz Chaim's notion that every person retains his cheskas kashrus is very, very difficult. I think the majority of poskim, don't listen to it. Certainly in cases of very serious allegations, we have to recognize that in our communities, we don't have the ability to investigate properly. And the long arm of the law is much better at investigating. And we also have to follow the Aruch HaShulchan, that there's no concern of Mesira. We do Rav Shechter Paskins like this Aruch HaShulchan all the time. If there is credible, now credible doesn't mean that I do a thorough investigation, I decide it's credible, because we don't have the ability to investigate. We're just not prepared for it. But if it sounds right, it doesn't sound fishy, so to report someone, that in our world is the fulfillment of Lamei Hashmiyim Abaya. Again, the Chafetz Chaim would not say this, but it seems to me that the majority of poskim don't agree with the Chafetz Chaim, and we believe that in a democracy there is no concern for Mesira. Traditionally in Jewish society, the Meiser, the person who would hand someone over to the government authorities, would be like, he would be completely ostracized from society. But that was if you were Moser someone to a government that would kill without any real laws. We, thank God, live almost the entire world today are countries where there are real laws. And it would seem that unless you live in some banana republic, so when there are allegations, so Mesira is not only permitted, but it's obligatory. L'mei chashmiya mabaya means that you have to be concerned. It doesn't mean that you're allowed to be concerned. It means you have to do it. So for me, these are some of the lessons of Gedaliah. Some of you asked to try to make things a little more contemporary. Churban Bayis Rishon is not particularly contemporary for us, but I do think that some of these ideas are relevant. I just want to conclude with one other point. You know, the Gemara tells us that the reason why we fast Tzom Gedaliah is because Gedola Misas Tzadikim Kisrefas Beis Elokeinu, that when a tzaddik like Gedaliah dies, it's like the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The problem is, how come the Gemara needs to give that reason? The Gemara could have said, like the Rambam writes, that the killing of Gedaliah is actually part of Churban HaBayis, because even after Churban HaBayis, there is still something that remains, and only after Gedaliah is killed does the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael completely end. So we should fast, because we fast on every stage in Churban HaBayis. We fast when there's a siege laid on the city. We fast when they breach the walls. All of the events of Churban HaBayis deserve a fast, So this should deserve a fast because it's part of the Churban HaBayis episode. How can we say Gedola Mises Tzadikim only? So it's a powerful question. I would argue that to some extent we would want to hide what happened to Gedalia. We would want to not fast because when you recognize that what happened to Gedalia was one Jew killing another Jew. Yeshua ben Netanya is for his own personal reasons. He's Mizera Hamalucha. He wants to rule. He goes, he kills Gedalia. A Jew killing a Jew is something that we would ordinarily hide. And we would not keep it as part of the Churban Beis HaMikdash scene. But there's another reason. The fact is we have two things. We have one element that this is part of Churban HaBayis. And we also have the fact that Gedola Mises Tzadikim. So that's why we fast on Tzom Gedalia. That's why we don't sweep it under the rug. Sometimes you have to publicize things that Jews do, which are bad. You can't sweep it under the rug because it's important to know about it. Exactly how we could apply this I'll say one point. You know, when the Altalena was coming into Israel with all of the weapons, and the commander of the Altalena is a man named Abrashastavsky, and he's killed. He's killed by Menachem Begin and his allies. And they went to Rav Kook, and they said, Rav Kook, a Jew killed a Jew. Rav Kook didn't believe it. Rav Kook didn't believe it. And to some extent, that should be our attitude. We should not believe that a Jew could kill another Jew. But sadly, part of the Tzom Gedalia lesson is that it's happened too many times. Okay, Chevra, so these are some of the thoughts I wanted to share with you about Tzom Gedalia. I thank you for listening, and tomorrow we have to get back to learning Gemara. That's like Chok Velo Yavar. I know tomorrow is a Tuesday, but we'll make believe that today is a Sunday because Tzom Gedalia always feels like Sunday. So tomorrow we will treat as a Monday rather than a Tuesday, and we will actually learn Gemara. That doesn't mean that Wednesday will be Tuesday. It just means that tomorrow is Monday. Okay? Fine. So have a good day, Chevra. All the best.
Rebbe?
Yes.
Thursday, are we going to have a shiur on Yom Kippur topics, or?
I could do that.
Or just curious.
I'm happy to do a shiur on Yom Kippur topics. If people have suggestions as to what to discuss, I'm happy to talk about it. Again, there's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you want to learn Shabbos. On the other hand, how can you not talk about Yom Kippur? Right? So if you want to discuss something about Yom Kippur, maybe post some ideas to the Shir WhatsApp group, and based on your ideas, I'm happy to say something about Yom Kippur on Thursday. Okay, Chevra, have a good day.